to make our treasury end those who come from the province. You can do that, and then the measurement team will introduce themselves, then members of parliament as well as our comrades from the provincial legislature, so that we can then begin our work knowing who is who.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honourable members. My name is Richard Levine, the Director General of the Department of Public Service and Administration. I'm accompanied by the Deputy Director General, Dr. Ellen Cornegay, and Ms. Tumelo Hopane, she's sitting at the back. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Why are we not sitting together? I think that should be easier. I think as usual, let everybody introduce themselves for herself. I just wanted to start somewhere with you.
I'm Ellen Cornegay, the Deputy Director General for DPSA. Tumelo Hopane, Department of Public Service Administration. Commissioner Mkwadati Diseko from the Public Service Commission.
The mic is off. No, it doesn't look like it's working.
Oh. Okay, now it's on. Thank you. Commissioner Diseko from the Public Service Commission. Audit Ramping, the Director General of the Public Service Commission.
Edmond Simpson, Deputy Director General, Office of the Public Service Commission.
John Mentuer, Office of the Public Service Commission.
Nosu Ogwaza, Office of the Public Service Commission.
Freeman Nomfala, the Accountant General. I also want to state, Chair, that the Director General of the Treasury will be coming through. Unfortunately, was double booked, but around about 9:30.
I'm Jason Kili, Acting Director General of Mpumalanga.
Nana Mahomola, Director General of Northwest.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Swati Gavinder, Acting DG of KZN Province.
Good morning. My name is Jason Babuji from the National Treasury. Good morning again. My name is Jason Babuji from the National Treasury.
My name is Charles Mayela, DG for States.
Nelly Manzini, Director General Limpopo.
James Herbert, Acting DG, Vishnika.
Good morning, I'm Nomfundo Chabalala from Gauteng Provincial Government, representing the DG of Gauteng.
Malawi Kuzani from the Gauteng Health Service Center. Good morning.
Geert Kuyt, Office of the Premier Gauteng, State Law Advisor's Office.
Adiga Malma from the Office of the Premier Gauteng.
Good morning, Sipho Mokoena from Office of the Premier Gauteng.
Good morning, Moira Marie Martin, Acting Director General, Northern Cape.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Bongile Mota, the DG for the Eastern Cape.
Morning, Chairperson. I'm Laura Best from the Office of the Premier in the Eastern Cape.
Right. Thank you very much. Pramesh?
Good morning. I'm Pramesh Bana, Corporate Executive from the Auditor General.
Good morning. I'm George Lerner, Business Executive, Office of the Auditor General.
Good morning. My name is Imran Patel from the Auditor General.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We know Slashland very well. Yeah, can we allow members to introduce themselves? Mr. Tomagam.
Good morning, I'm Sarah Mangiana, member of the board.
My name is Kelsey. Good name is Wale Matlaji. The talk of lawyer committee.
Dumelang, ke Thabelo Tshilwane, ke leloko la committee.
Morning, my name is Faith Mutambi, a member of COPA.
Morning, from the Langweni Mavila, alternate member of the committee.
Dietlos Tutoi, COPA.
My name is Naren Singh, a member of this committee, COPA.
Derek Ngobeni, Chairperson Scopa Dipompo.
Matthew Ramzati, Chairperson Scopa is in Cape.
Good morning, Greg Schneeman, member of the Portfolio Committee on Police.
Good morning, my name is Motladipula Khosho, Chairperson of Public Accounts Committee, Northwest Provincial Legislature.
Mbulelo Madana, Chairperson of Scopa, Western Cape.
I'm Lorraine Machian, member of Scopa.
Trevor Bonham, member of Scopa.
Good morning, my name is Mark Seal, I'm member of Scopa.
Good morning, my name is Roy Ainsley, a member of this committee.
My name is Manda Mbili, Scopa.
My name is Johan Schandeblom, actually, the funding committee.
My name is Niels van Rooyen. I'm chairperson of public accounts in the Free State.
Good morning. I'm Alexandra Bekes. I'm the chairperson of Scopa Northern Cape.
Good morning. My name is Doreen Senopanyane. I'm from the Housing League. I'm a member of Scopa.
Morning, Sipo Makama, Chairperson, Scopa and Gauteng.
Right, thank you very much. I am Comrade Temba Koti. I chair the committee. Before we kick off, may we request that our cellular phones be switched off. Not even on silent. It affects the recording upstairs, so please could keep that closed. Once again, DG, we would like to welcome you and the officials you're coming with, as well as the commissioners and officials from the Public Service Commission, as well as National Treasury, and a special welcome to our DGs from the provinces. It is quite a pleasure to have you around here in Cape Town. I also want to extend a special welcome to our colleagues from the provinces who are chairing the Public Accounts Committee there. We appreciate your positive response to our request to be part of our engagement here this morning. You would all appreciate the sensitivity and importance of the engagement we're having this morning. You'll recall, DG, that arising out of the problems with the arms deal, one of the issues that had to be settled was the question of conflict of interest. And it was on that basis that the Disclosure Framework Act of 2004 was part to try and address that. But I suppose we are here today dealing with to what extent has that act become a living document, or to what extent has that legislation that sought to close a very, very unfortunate chapter in our post-liberation history. To what extent has it really been operationalized? I think cutting through the Fed, that's what it's all about. We have requested the chairpersons of the public account committee from the provinces to be with us. Because the reports of the Auditor General does not only deal with national departments, it also deals with the state of affairs in the province. And to make sure that there is completeness on this aspect, in our wisdom here at SCOPA, we felt it would be important that they are part of this interaction, but understanding that their being here does not constitute the end of the process, but actually the beginning, in that there are separate, detailed, focused reports per province, which would expect that they should be able to take up and run with those provincial reports. But that an engagement at this level would assist them to have a global sense of what the challenges are and where the challenges are, so that whatever they are dealing with in their respective provinces must be seen within that broader context. And so for that reason that we also asked the Directors General from the provinces to come, so that issues that relate to the provinces, even though they may not be that very detailed as with the national, they nonetheless are contained in the single report of the Auditor General, which we, as the Public Accounts Committee here at National, have to deal with. And I am happy that all the Directors General are here, including KwaZulu-Natal. I must say up front, Mr. Modley, that the report that sought to suggest that you were not going to come were not entirely correct. I want to say this in public, so that it must not be as if there was a deliberate attempt to cast aspersions on your person. There are challenges with KZN, but certainly not your coming here. I wanted to correct that up front so that it must not remain as a cloud over your interaction with us here in Parliament. I hope that goes down well with you. Okay, sure. Right, having said that, I want us to get straight into the issues at hand and hand over to Member Tlali to kickstart the process. Yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, as I greet our guests, allow me to probe questions on approval to perform remunerative work. According to the research done, there are 2,319 government officials that had an interest in companies or CCs that did business with government departments. And of the 2,319, only 75 officials had approval to do so. Now, the questions that I would be asking are related to the numbers as they are coming from different provinces, and I wish and hope, Honorable Chair, that the DGs of these provinces would be able to answer in every question that I pose. We look at Eastern Cape, they had 230 officials that are concerned. Only one had an approval. Free State, 116, only two had an approval.
Gauteng, 179, only two had an approval. Limpopo, 929, 8 had an approval. Mpumalanga, 573, 49 had an approval. National Departments, 49, only 3 had an approval. Northern Cape, 29, 3 had an approval. Northwest, 149, only 4 had an approval. And Western Cape, with 65 employees, 3 getting an approval. The total of only 75 out of 2,319. Now, my first question. Was disciplinary action taken against the employees who perform other remunerative work without approval of the national department where they are employed? If yes, what action was taken? Thank you.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I always start throw it to you, DG, the department, and through you we can then relate it to other officials who are here.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honourable Member. I think the specific answers would need to be given by the provinces, and that is because the framework that exists is decentralized to executive authorities of the departments who are required to give the permission and thereby also manage the situation within their departments as to whether or not remunerative work is being undertaken. I do think that one of the key nuances of this report is the question of directorships and whether directorships automatically should be considered as remunerative work. And the Auditor General in the report does refer to the question at the end of the report. They make recommendations around remunerative work and the declaration up front of directorships, and they also refer to the question of a legal opinion to clarify Section 30 of the Public Service Act, which is not specific as to what constitutes remunerative work. I think this also might impact on the figures, Chairperson, that's why I'm raising it, because there is a key in 8.2.1 of this report, there is reference to a legal opinion which would need to clarify Section 30. Although I'm not certain as to who in the DPSA indicated that a legal opinion would be obtained, there is a legal opinion indeed already from 2003 on this matter, which does create certain difficulties.
All right. Let me do this. You are saying you are not in a position to respond to the question directly, but go to the province. Now let's go to the province first. Yes?
We go to the provinces. Maybe the DG should tell us if he's contesting what the Auditor General has presented to us. Because the cases that I was reading, the numbers here, they're talking about remunerative work. Now, when you quote legal or not legal advice on what directorships, are you contesting it so that you can clarify it?
No, Honourable Member, I'm not contesting it.
Okay, can we go to the provinces? Right? Can we get responses from Stanley Nekhaya in Mpumalanga?
Thank you very much.
I would confine myself to the question that was raised as to whether we have taken action against those who have not complied with our regulations. People are doing business with our government without the necessary approval. So before probably I respond on the action that we intend taking, I just need to point out that we had a difficulty when we looked at the report initially, in that we had to start our own probing to establish who these people actually by names are, so that we can individually, as departments, take actions against those who reside within our own sphere of operation, as provincial departments. We have instructed all HODs in the province to probe further, to track down every individual whose name is in the list that they took time to establish, so that the necessary actions can be taken against them.
I think this is that you don't as yet have the name of the people referred to by the AG.
We have some, not all, Chair, because we have sent out the circular to departments to establish those names. We have not.
What has happened to those whose names you have?
Well, the disciplinary procedure, Chair, takes us a bit of time. You need to confront these people with the allegations, and they must be given chance to respond.
How many are involved so far?
In our province, the numbers here, we are not contesting these numbers. These are the numbers that the.
No, I'm talking about those that you have already started disciplinary proceedings against.
Well, in the office of the Premier, I know very well, because we had only one. Actually, that's the one we've done, but other departments as well are doing their work, and we're expecting a report.
So at this stage, you don't have figures?
No, not sure.
Okay. Matladi?
President, I'm sure my question was straightforward. Have you taken an action? If the answer is yes, let it be yes. If it's no, let it be no. And if you have taken an action, what is it? I'm not interested in what you will do. I'm not talking future. Have.
All right.
This is almost a year,
okay,
ever since this report was out.
So Mpumalanga, they are still in the process of trying to take action. They have not taken action against anybody. That's it. Right? Northwest? Yeah, just a minute. Yes, from the front.
They haven't taken action clearly because there's no internal monitoring mechanism. If it wasn't for the DG, they would be unaware of the problem. They are not monitoring themselves the situation in that particular province as to who has permission and who hasn't got permission. There is no monitoring mechanism. So unless, without the DAG's report, they would be unaware of the problem. That's probably why they have not taken action. Why is there no internal monitoring mechanism?
But DG, are there any internal monitoring mechanisms in Mpumalanga that should detect that people are not complying with legislation and regulations?
Chair, there are regulations that we enforce in the province. Everybody is aware of it. And what
No. We're talking
monitoring
that those regulations are followed.
Chair, through our disclosure system, every year we issue out the instructions for every person in that business with government.
DG, from what you just said, clearly you have not been able to pick it up through your system. You didn't even know who those people are until the Auditor General reported.
Chair, we haven't been able to pick it up in the manner that we
right. So the system is not working. There's not been that effective. Clearly.
Clearly, there's been some improvement.
Okay, Chair. All right. I think let's move to another province. I think what is clear is that in Mpumalanga, they have not as yet done anything. Northwest?
Thank you, Chair. The intention here is not to be defensive, not in any way.
We certainly are very hostile to defensive
posture. I don't plan on being defensive. But also just to say that, the issue about audit is usually always after the fact. clearly there should be some mechanism in place to catch some of these things that happen. But you don't always do that. But from our side, when we got the report, I sent out the circular to the HODs to get responses in terms of what action has been taken with regards to some of the people that I mentioned in the report. Some disciplinary action.
Do you have figures?
I don't have the figures, but I have one or two reports. But I can get you the figures later.
No, you see, ma'am, both are the figures should have brought here so that you can account to us. So if you came here without proper information, how then do we engage? So I think it's a shortcoming in that particular regard. The information should have been here. So clearly it says that the monitoring systems, they are also not working to, on your own, pick up instances of a deviation from existing regulations.
Yes, sir. But can I continue to tell you what you've also done?
Well, if you can say that in a sentence or two, say this is what we've done. Because what we want are numbers. Much like you spoke about numbers from the Northwest, so many people. Now, if you say out of the 9, we have disciplined 15, that should be it. Or, no, we have not disciplined anybody. Now, we don't have the figures with you here. So I'll say maybe let's park it there. And check others. I was about to go to KZN, but as members are aware, in the report, there are no figures for KZN. AG?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, you're correct in that we don't have a table report for KZN at the provincial legislature, and neither does the figures appear in the consolidated national report. But we do have a list of exceptions. My suggestion would be that those exceptions were the same exceptions that were provided to the respective departments in KZN, to which we did not receive conclusive responses, and that hence we could not complete the report. So we may have figures, but we can't authoritatively say what's the real outcome of those figures, other than that there were exceptions. Thank you.
Mr. Governor, what happened? Out of all these 9 provinces, there have been conclusive and completed responses, but there haven't been any from, well, they have not been able to conclude the audit in case of them.
Thank you, Chair. Right up front, I need to say that on historical basis, I became the acting DG from the 20th of May, and when the newspaper article surfaced, then I met with the AG from the province with regard to the actual status of the various reports in KZN. Since then, we've concluded that with the AG, And I'll give you specific dates in terms of when the management letter was sent to the various departments, was around about July, August of 2008, and the final management report that was sent to the AG was in August 08, was in November 08. But there are certain exceptions where the AG couldn't complete the report. And basically, there was no action taken against any of the employees, but we are putting processes in place.
Let's hold it right there, because a letter sent to you personally on the 25th of February 2008, to date, there has been no conclusive follow-up. Let alone other departments, the one sent to you, or the one where acknowledgement of receipt was signed by you, the Office of the Premier.
Thank you, Chair. For the Office of the Premier, where I was the CFO, there's no outstanding issues. The we had two cases reported, and the two cases were reported on, and there was no outstanding issues for the Office of the Premier.
Right, maybe we can deal with that later. I'd like to come back to Matlan so that she continues. Unless it is the province that says we have done something exceptional, not an explanation on why things have not been done. Because taking from Mpumalanga and Northwest, what it says is before the Auditor General came in, there was no awareness. And since the Auditor General came in, there is still some stuttering attempt to get the job done. But unless it is the province that says we have done something drastic, then we'd want to hear that. Otherwise, we'd want to move on. Magmazin, love, love.
Yeah, I love that. That's a new one. Honorable Chair, in Limpopo, we have done quite a lot from the province. Yes, unfortunately, I did not collect the information from the various departments in terms of disciplinary.
Okay, let's do this. If you don't have collected information, let's leave it at that. Because we would want to have pointed responses. Right, I would want us to continue. Comrade Mashiane thing, and then I want to revert back to Madam.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we had an agreement in the briefing meeting that these DGs, when they come here, they'll confirm the numbers and also the names. We want the names to be. They must tell us who is actually involved in the conflict of interest. But secondly, it's highly unacceptable. The report was dated August 2008. Now we're sitting here and being told that nothing has been done. You can't be serious. It's either you're not taking us seriously or your job seriously. But let me pause there, Chairperson.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much. What we said yesterday to those that came here to appear before us on the N2 Gateway project can be said to the officials here that have responded already. We needed answers. We needed the information here. But having said that, can the Auditor General's office, with the concurrence of KwaZulu-Natal, fill in the blank on page 3 of the report where you've got notes, the number of letters issued to departments with regard to KwaZulu-Natal, now that you do have that information?
Moving, I want to close it for the chair and continue.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. In fact, I just want to be clarified, primarily because I come from the Limpopo, as I've indicated, I preside over this committee in that province. And I too have raised questions to the Director General and to all heads of department in that province already. And they are going to appear before us as COPPA in that province. And my thinking when I came here, I thought COPPA at national level will be dealing with national, those who are doing business with national departments and so on. But if the Director General will account here and again come and account to us in the province, I just wanted to receive some kind of clarity, because the same questions that have been raised are being raised even in the provinces as well.
Right. There should be no problem about that. I said when I started that the reports and figures on provinces are part and parcel of the report that the Auditor General submitted here in Parliament. And because we're dealing with that report, we felt it was correct that those who are from the provinces should be able to give us some clarity on issues that pertain to them, which does not preclude you in the province from pursuing them in much greater detail, because the provincial report will be much, much detailed than what it is here. If you have that report in front of you, you'll see that it just top figures at the global level. But if you look at the national, it actually goes to specific departments and puts specific amounts at national level, but not in the province. So here we'll deal with it at that global level, but in the province, I think you should be able to go even deeper and further into specifics. So let's keep it at that level.
Thank you, Chairperson. There is a question that honorable members have been just talking about in circles, but I want to put it straight to the provinces. Do they have any systems of control to manage the performance of other remunerative work by employees? If they do have these systems of control, what are they?
Can we get a report from the Eastern Cape?
Honorable Chair and Honorable Member, in the Eastern Cape, in 2007, we, as part of the anti-corruption and anti-fraud drive, we started a drive including all departments to get all employees that trained with government to declare. We have the figures here, which we are sort of monitoring every year, except the Department of Health and the Department of Social Development are the only departments that have not quite complied fully with that exercise. I don't know if the Honourable Member wants us to read the figures that are coming from different departments as far as the number of employees trading with government that have declared. I can read those figures right. The department.
I think Honorable Mflat will follow up from Sekai Makolo. Yeah.
Follow up on the question is, since you have that record, were you able to pick up, we're talking about Eastern Cape, were you able to pick up the 250 employees that have been doing this without approval, except one?
Yes, Chair, we have. We have been able to pick up those figures. And in some of the departments, just that I do not have, as I said, that there are two departments that I don't have figures for, but we have the figures from the officials that are doing business with government without permission.
Talking about what the Auditor General came up with, I'm talking about your system, because it is an internal control system. Were you able to pick up these people before the report could be out? Or did you get the report, then you followed on the report?
We put the system in place, Honourable Member, before the Auditor General's report in 2007, late 2007. And the report, I think, came out in 2008. Thank you.
No, they did the report after the Auditor General had interacted with them, but before the report came out. So the Auditor General visited them, and they woke up and realized they must do something and started to do something. So they didn't have anything before. Right, I think before I move to other provinces, it might be important to check. DG from National Treasury, welcome. Because I think part of what we may need to check is the Department, Public Service Commission, and National Treasury. In this particular matter, as people who have oversight, what have you been doing, or what are you doing? Or since this report came out, what new insight has it given you to deal with this challenge? I would start with the Public Service Commission.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Before I answer you, I must point out that the Auditor General and the Public Service Commission have a memorandum of understanding to ensure that we work efficiently. Part of the report they did for 2008, which covers the period 2005-06, is based on the work of the Public Service Commission. We have a much more current report that takes us up to 2008 that should constitute the baseline for SCOPA and the political party in making the new government account. There was a confusion in an answer that came in response to the honourable member about what measures have been taken and why this wasn't picked up. The answer was it wasn't indicated in the financial disclosure form. Actually, the financial disclosure form as it stands does not require officials to declare RWAP, remunerated work outside the public service. We have made recommendations to the Minister of Public Service and Administration to close that gap that will assist departments. Because as a matter of fact, when officials declare their private interests, they would as well have to declare remunerated work outside the public service. So what's happening at the moment is that you have to do extraneous work through CPRO and find out what is it that officials are up to. But as a matter of course, I'm not meant to declare. I think...
Can I just check the department? Is that kept closed? Or when is it going to be closed? In terms of the current disclosure form that does not require people to automatically declare whether they are directors or own companies and stuff.
Thanks, Chairperson. You will recall that we appeared before SCOPE on the 17th of February this year to discuss progress made with the Integrated Conflict of Interest Management Framework. We did indicate that the matter is with Cabinet, but I think there are certain elements coming out of this report that would require us to address them. I think the one you're referring to is the specific issue of automatic declaration of directorships. But I'm not sure I can elaborate when the commission is finished on some other aspects.
Yeah,
there are legal issues that we would need to consider with respect to that.
What are those legal issues?
Well, I think that there is a legal opinion that was drafted in 2003. Where the state law advisors comment on the term remunerative work in Section 30 of the Public Service Act. It is an opinion we considered when we amended the Public Service Act. But I think that a directorship of a company or membership of a closed corporation may not, in a legal sense, automatically constitute remunerative work. That would obviously be in the case of dormant companies or closed corporations, or whether the...
Are you suggesting that the report of the Auditor General, the figures that they've given, might actually be incorrect in view of that legal opinion?
I wouldn't want to dispute the report of the Auditor General because I think the legal matter is not settled. I think it's still an open question. That's why I would not like to dispute the report of the Auditor General.
But you are quoting that legal opinion as a form basis of how the legal prescripts or definitions are considered. So as you're sitting there, it is that legal opinion that you use as your basis. Because if that is the case, then it means we'll have instances of people who, in the Auditor General's opinion, are guilty of engaging in remunerative work while they're employed. And yet, where you're seated, when you look at it from that legal opinion, they are not guilty. Implying, therefore, that there will be a dispute of interpretation.
No, I think you're correct, Honourable Chairperson. It's certainly a risk which would be exposed during the process of disciplinary action being undertaken. But I think in the view of the reports, and I think the Public Service Commission can elaborate at the national level in terms of what has been done, because so little disciplinary action has been implemented, we are not able to test this particular kind of legal opinion.
Thank you, Chair. I think at this stage, as a Public Service Commission, I can comment on the ORWAP. I won't give our actions in relation to the conflicts of interest. But I think in terms of ORWAP, we've done quite a number of work in terms of ORWAP from 2004. And I think we highlighted from then already that there were problems in relation to the legislation and there were gaps in relation to this. But I think the important point to understand, because I think there is some confusion in the connection of ORWAP with the financial disclosure form. I think the clear gap that the Public Service Commission identified is that while in some cases people may even admit to doing ORWAP, that's remunerative work, we're saying that in terms of that form, they need to also attach the approval when they submit the form. And I think that kind of amendment to the form has not been carried out. But I understand we had proposed these amendments to the Minister for Public Service and Administration in 2008. And with the comprehensive conflict of policy, and I know that these amendments have been incorporated. However, the form has not been amended until such time as the executive takes a decision in relation to that amendment. So I think in terms of what the Public Service Commission has done, I think they've identified this gap. They've even given a wording to propose how that proposal should be incorporated. And really at this stage, it's really up to the executive to approve it, so that the form could be amended and we can then monitor it in terms of that amendment.
Yes.
Chair, but that doesn't mean that while that is being done, established cases or occurrences of ARWAPs cannot be disciplined. And I think where departments probably make a mistake is in how they interpret the establishment of the existence of working without approval. If the Auditor General has established that and the Public Service Commission has established that, I'm not sure that departments need to start from scratch to establish that before they can take action. Remember, the Commission is a constitutional body that carries authority. They can dispute or argue with us and the Auditor General on what we have found. But our findings in themselves are authoritative. They give departments the basis to act. So the gap is an interpretation. When the commission is found, do we start an investigation that will take 6 months or 8 months and then investigate and then discipline? It must be made clear again by, I think, DPSA that findings of this nature may require action immediately. And then on the question of the interpretation of the hours, I mean, the Commission has a broader interpretation in the spirit of the Constitution. One doesn't get a directorship as one would buy a pair of socks. It's not like owning a pair of socks or a hat that you wear. It's for a purpose, to earn income. It isn't just like a fancy artifact that you keep in a box somewhere. It generates income. And I hope we will meet each other as we discuss with the DPSA to tighten, to see how, without prolonging the process of really filling the gaps, we have that. We would prefer that interpretation that says, you just don't wake up and say, today it would be nice to have a directorship for a company that will procure from government. You do that for a specific purpose, to earn income. Beyond the income that you earn.
Thank you very much. Honourable Dupont.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question or two, but first I want to make a comment. I don't think we can look at the so-called legal opinion from 2003. You can go to anybody and get a legal opinion.
and you will get three or four opinions, and the judge will decide different. But what bothers me is I've seen a lot of fancy footwork this morning here already. But I think if you talk about the remuneration, the simple question is it taxable? Is that guy going for what he's done? If he earns money or his directorship or anything, is South going to tax him? If South is going to tax him, it's work. I'm sorry to say. It's income. So my question now is to the director generals here, and they earn a lot of money and they must now start earning it, is that, is there any director general here that can tell me, I would like to volunteer on follow up on these cases? And the second question I pose to them is, if you do get up and tell us, just tell us what is the average time it takes your department to investigate and to institute a disciplinary hearing. Because if you can't tell me, you've got no case. Thank you.
Yeah. Can we get a response from another case?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Now, Honourable Chairperson, I want to start with a question that was asked by the Honourable Member regarding disciplinary action taken against officials. I think in the Northern Cape, the question, without any fancy footwork, is no. We haven't taken any action. We haven't got adequate internal control mechanisms. When departmental officials declare, all we are monitoring is what is the compliance rate in terms of their declarations and the disclosure forms that are being sent to the Public Service Commission. We are not at a point where we can analyze those financial disclosure forms and whether they constitute conflict of interest. And I want to just admit that we don't do hardly enough at the moment to be dealing with this problem. Thank you, Chair.
Matladi? Can I do this? Let's allow Matladi to finish, and then Kumrit can then make follow-ups. Otherwise, it disrupts the flow.
Chairperson, I'm frustrated because the questions I'm asking do get negative responses. Nevertheless, I'll continue and conclude my business. I would like to know if the employees were aware of the contravention of Chapter 7, Sections 30 and 31 of the Public Service Act 1994, Act Number 103 of 1994, PSA. In other words, I'm asking about their awareness. It means that it is the department that should be knowing if these people are aware, because they would have made them aware. And the last one, what will happen to those employees that are involved in this report and who have ever since resigned from the department? Thank you, Chair.
What is the picture, General, in relation to the question that she's asking? I know that you cannot answer for these other departments who still decide as a committee what to do with specific departments that are quoted in the report, but from where you are standing, what is the picture? What is happening?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think certainly the Auditor General's report points to a lack of awareness in 7.1.2F3, and I think that is in a sense an answer to the question, although the provincial DGs might elaborate specifically on the situation in their provinces, is that there is an inadequate awareness across the public service. There have been various awareness campaigns, both from the side of the Public Service Commission as well as the Department of Public Service and Administration. But obviously awareness campaigns within departments are required. So I think that is a clear finding of this report, which I would see as an accurate finding, that there is a problem with the level of awareness. The second part of the question of the Honourable Member is what will happen to those public servants implicated who have resigned from the public service. The situation public service, and it would be not possible to subject them to disciplinary procedures which are applicable within the public service. Thank you.
All right. Matladi, are you done?
Yeah, I'm done. Although I'm still hesitant about the last response. Because when people use the public funds and they use it in the wrong way, whether they are still public servants or not, I believe the legal actions have to be taken against them. Because these people are traceable. They are not dead, isn't it? And then I believe that we could still help them. They can still be called to parade, answer, and pay. Thank you, Chief.
Okay. Harold Blom, Singh, and Macau.
Thank you, Chair. Unfortunately, we are dealing with many DGs this morning. But my question is, this report is August 2008. Now, at what point did the DGs become aware of this irregularities, this employees that have memberships and members of companies? And did they inform their premiers or the MECs? So only two questions. At what time did they become aware of it? Only at 2008? And did they inform their premiers or the MECs? And what happened after, if they informed the premiers and the MECs in this regard?
Let me check. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. In the first case, when we received the report, we made the Premier aware, and the Premier also called a special exco meeting where he made copies available to the members of the Executive Council. We also made them aware of this. And previously, we did not have what one would call internal control systems centrally from the Department and of the Premier for the following reasons. The senior SMS members who are director upwards, you know, they are the only ones that declare and they hand the form directly to the executive authorities. And the executive authorities send the forms to the Public Service Commission. And the disclosure framework says that no other person should have access to the content of the report. When we received the report, we then realized that there were gaps. And then we were supposed to come up with the systems and so on. That is when we talked to the other provinces through teleconference. And after that, we then decided that because of inconsistencies, that each province, when we checked, we're doing things differently because there are no guidelines and so on. So we agreed that in the next...
Are you saying there are no national guidelines?
In terms of how to deal with this from the Premier's office perspective. There are people below director, deputy director below. The disclosure framework does not require them to disclose. That is a challenge that we've discovered as a result of the report. And the departments, however, in my context, are following up, are investigating, checking these cases, those that have not disclosed, and so on and so forth, that disciplinary action can be taken.
All right. Okay. Let me check with Gauteng.
Thank you, Chair.
Just a minute.
Professor, when introductions were made, I heard the lady say, "I'm representing the DG of Gauteng." Will she be answerable for the responsibilities of the DG? Because right here we need answers and definite answers, not from representatives, but from the real people that are in office. I'm checking on that.
Thanks, Chair. The DG has appointed
given powers in terms of the requirements for me to act in his position for today, for the main purpose that he was not in a position to attend this meeting. So I am going to respond to the questions that the members are posing. Okay?
You have all the information for this purpose?
Yes, I have been given access to the information which the DG has.
Okay, that's fine. Then go on. Just a minute.
Yeah. I think you know that in this committee. And I don't know why the lady is even attempting to speak. Because we have called DG and want it, not representation. Because the next thing going on is what will be saying to us, you don't know. So I think Chairperson advising her. Oh, okay. I hope so. Yeah.
Let's allow her to respond. She says she has access to all the information that the DG has and has been delegated with the authority to come and speak on behalf of the DG.
Thanks, Chairperson. With regards to the various questions that have been raised, I think in housing, what we would want to put forward to the committee is that in cases of disclosing work, performed remunerated work, is that it is handled at a departmental level, as already been highlighted by the colleague from FinState. And as such, in the province, we do not have systems that are coordinating it centrally. It's only performed within a department where the individual seeks approval from the executing authority, and that approval, upon it being granted, then it is submitted to the Public Service Commission. So the systems are there at a departmental level, however, they are not integrated at a provincial level. And the other...
But then it appears that even at that very departmental level, they are not effective, are they?
Well, I think, yes, Chair, I would want to acknowledge that there are weaknesses even at a departmental level, more so because there have been these employees that have been identified who have performed and did not receive approval from their executing authorities.
Okay. So the fact of the matter is things are done at the departmental level, but there are serious weaknesses.
I still have an answer on my question.
On which one?
And the questions, if the Premier were informed or the MECs were informed.
Yeah.
I want that from every DG that's here today.
I just want to pick on the two. First, they said, yes, they did. They informed the Premier. In housing, what happened?
Yes, Chairperson, I would like to confirm that upon obviously this issue being brought to the DG's attention, the Premier was indeed informed. So the Premier is aware of this report that the AG.
And what action has been taken subsequent to that?
Chairperson, I would want to also confirm that there have been circulars that have been issued to the various accounting officers with regards to this issue. Because at the provincial level, the national AG was handling this issue with the various accounting officers. The DG has requested those accounting officers to provide him with feedback with regards to measures being taken to ensure that the current
What has been the feedback? That's what I want to know. What has been the feedback?
I don't have that information with me.
All right, let's leave it at that, because you see, it becomes us the thing.
On that point, I think it will be good if the DGs can provide us with the circulars and the time when there were discussions with the MECs and with the premiers.
All right, I hear that. But I suppose the provincial chairpersons are noting down some of the things that they need to, you know, to follow up on. I'll give you an opportunity. Let me hear Honorable Singh, Asit Singh, and Makam.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the whole question of guidelines, as mentioned by the DG, is going to be important for the department in consultation with others to come up with. Because nothing stops a public servant from carrying out remunerative work with permission. But if you look at the levels of permission here and the circumstances, I mean, if you look at correctional services, three employees did work to an amount of almost 21 million, and the DG felt there was nothing wrong with that. Now, it's not only about how much they earn, Chairperson, but it's the impact on service delivery. SAPs, doctors, nurses, correctional services, we hear about moonlighting. Right? They use the state as a comfort zone to get their pension and all other benefits, but yet they're going to work outside. And that outside work impacts on the service that they perform for the state. And this is where provinces, and I think in all of us, have to interrogate the rules and regulations that govern what kind of work you can do outside of your normal state work.
Okay, all right. Welcome.
Thanks, Chair. If you look on some pages in the report, for instance, page 28, the response, general response from department. It says the department indicated that they would follow up on the transaction to determine whether preferential treatment or possible fraudulent action had been performed. You go also to the response on page 30, so on and so on. And today you see some of us come from Halting to this meeting. Get the responses that we are not yet ready and so on. I think we should put it forward that we do not have any intention to visit Cape Town for nothing. If then you thought we don't have other things to do, I do not find it more convincing that there is no action that has not yet been taken by the government. I yet in Mpumalanga, Northwest, and also my province is not sure what is happening. I think that it should not be accepted. And my worry is that, Chair, if people do business while being employees of government, this type of thing should teach us a lot of things, because many things happened in many countries out of this type of behavior. We need to also know what are the trends. If these people are doing business with the housing department, how are they linked with other departments, nationally, in other provinces, so on and so forth? It might be very much concerned. But also, to check also whether, why departments say they have not yet traced them when they pay the monies into the bank accounts, but they have not yet traced those monies. They can also establish that there is no, the AG establishes that some payments were made, there is no VAT. They don't have VAT, they are not registered, and so, but yet we are told they are not able to discover it. So I'm saying, Chairperson, it is important that we should take into account that some of us, or most of us, came here, left some of our responsibilities back home in our provinces, and we get such clumsy responses, which I think amount to malicious, because this one is malicious compliance, but we'll take action and
all right.
you know, and also tantamount to contempt of parliament. If people come here having been informed that this is what you expect from the everyday as well.
I want us to move to. Can I request Honorable Steele and my chairperson from Northern Cape, First State? Can we please bear with me? Just note those questions down. I'll give you an opportunity at the end. I want us to move to the next. Agreeing. I hope you can note that down and we come. I just want to make sure that we flow. There are two things that emerge from this focus area. One, it is that in all 9 provinces, they have ineffective or non-existent monitoring system on this matter. So they don't know. The AG's report was a wake-up call. And I think that is what we need to all agree upon. That is our challenge, that is the problem that we're having. And secondly, the Department of Public Service and Administration, which was the sponsor, or which is supposed to have a sense of what is happening in the public service, has a legal opinion since 2003, and this is 2009, and we're still at that point of a legal opinion. The challenges of interpretation. For 6 years, we were burdened with issues of interpretation. And I don't think the department has done well in managing this thing. I hear that it's now with the executive and all that kind of stuff, but I think from where we're seated, we can't be waiting for 6 years to close the gap on it. And I do hear that the department seems to have a very restrictive interpretation vis-à-vis the Public Service Commission that has a broader interpretation. And I think that dichotomy does need to be closed so that there is certainty from department and public service in terms of what must happen. I think we cannot allow that to become a gray area unnecessary. Because otherwise, this report in front of us is useless. If we can't agree what is remunerative work, then we don't need this report in front of us. Let's have the legal opinion closed, and then they go and do an audit. But as the commissioner indicated, the findings of the Auditor General and their position as the Public Service Commission is authoritative enough to be the basis of operation. So if the Auditor General has made a founding and the Public Service Commission has made a founding, that becomes the line of march. I think that's how we should look at it. If there's anything to the contrary, it then needs to be resolved swiftly. It can't linger on for 6 years. I think for me that is what comes out of this this set of questions from Matlade and the follow-up. The AG.
I just need your guidance. There was a specific question posed to us regarding the management report that we issued in KZN. Do you want me to respond to it now before we go into the next focus area, or should we come back to it later?
Well, let's close it now. I thought I would come to it later. But let's, so that we are done with the KZN issue and we know where we stand.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think Honorable Singh requested an indication of the number of management reports issued in KZN, and I wish to confirm that for the 15 departments where it was looked at, there were 15 management reports issued in KZN. Now, I think it's very important to understand the context of the management report, because in terms of our standards for doing these kind of audits, we focus heavily on due process and factual correctness. The main purpose of the management report is to confirm factual correctness, factual accuracy of our findings. So we may have come up with exceptions, and for example, in KZN, we may have said that we have 464 employees which we think have been doing business with other departments in KZN which have related interests in companies,
to the tune of payments of about 54 million. That's the kind of exception that would be in the management report. We then ask the department to go and confirm this based on their own information, which we may not be privy to, and the department then confirm it. That only becomes something that we can include in the report, because we don't want to come to scope up, for example, with a report that's full of disputed information. In the case of KZN, many of the departments, what they have indicated in response to our management report is that we are busy with internal investigations. We will review this and then come back to you, AG, with information that confirms the factual accuracy of your findings. And in some instances, we are still waiting for that information. And that's the reason why we could not complete our report in that particular problem. Thank you.
Are you waiting 6 months or more, almost a year?
Yes, in some instances.
Mr. Govender, how do you bring closure to this? And why is it extraordinary? Let me say, why is it non-compliant?
Thank you, Chair. As my other colleagues have stated, the Auditor General worked directly with the accounting officers of the respective departments. This wasn't coordinated via the Director General's office. When we got hold of this report, I presented this report to the Premier, and it was the first time the Premier had sight of this report. And what we've done in the province is that we set stringent guidelines. We called a meeting which was addressed by the Premier with all the heads of departments.
When was that?
We had one meeting last week Wednesday when we had cabinet, and there's one meeting scheduled for tomorrow also.
Yeah, I mean, the report came out in August last year. It's almost a year now.
Yes, Chair. The problem was that the Auditor General worked directly with the accounting officers of the respective departments, and the Office of the Premier wasn't involved in this.
That's why I asked my question. I think we must get clarity. When did the DGs inform the Premiers about this report and have discussions on that one? Because otherwise, 10 months after this report came out, it is not good enough for us.
Comrade Michelle.
But the KZN issue is different, because we're still waiting for information and confirmation of figures from the province. And I don't think what we're hearing from the DG is the truth. I think he's hiding the truth somewhere. He can't say to us, from August 2008, when the report came out, it means there was work done before the report came out. And then a meeting is only going to take place, or only took place, last week, and another one next week. Please bear the truth on the table, that you've known about this thing, even if the AG's office was dealing directly with the department. But I think that the DG's office should have information that the AG's office is there. And I want the AG's office to confirm that before we go back to the DG. Thank you.
Yes, Chair, I must say that the fact that this audit was being conducted throughout the country, the different departments, was well known. The accounting officers, it is true, we certainly work with the accounting officers and the individual departments, but I think we would have assumed, perhaps incorrectly, that the mechanisms within the province where this kind of systemic focus area is being elevated to the level of the DG in the province or the office of the Premier. I must also say that we fail to acknowledge that ever since the appointment of the acting DG in KZN, that he has personally taken steps to engage with our office to try and address the issue, that is fair to say that he has, in person, not been slack on that, but certainly that's the case.
Thank you, Chief. I can just also mention, before we started with this audit, we informed the former Minister of DPSI about this audit, and she committed to inform all DGs and head of departments and Director Generals and National about this audit and to ask for their cooperation for the audit. And maybe the DPSA can just confirm whether that has been communicated to the various organs. ma'am.
Chairperson, this is why I wanted to come earlier on to explain something. There may be a sense in which you're asking Director General questions that they can't answer, as Dr. Nwaila was saying. The responsibility for financial disclosures rests with ministers and MECs. Only they carry out that function. So a DG may not know how many people have declared, and a DG has no legal powers to enforce, as per the Act, the declaration. So at a political level, you need to chase your politicians. National level, it's the ministers. Provincial level, it is the MEC.
Okay. Right.
Secondly, in relation to the provincial DGs, at law, they do not have powers in relation to individual HODs of departments. So you have a scenario where politically the responsibility for overall financial declarations is with the ministers who carry it out or may not carry it out, and we push them as the Public Service Commission, but the DGs have no right to know who. They will know only if they are told.
All right. Now,
by the politician.
No, I hear you. But once we close the KZN issue, this report came out in August last year indicating that there is no finality from KZN. And from what you're telling us, it's like it's only last week that you started to act upon it. And I think the disquiet from members is that it's been there since August. And it was clear that KZN has not been as upfront as it should be. And nothing was done about it until last week. I think that's the disquiet from members.
Sorry, Chair. During the interim period, there were discussions between the heads of departments of the respective departments and the Auditor General in terms of the reports and all that were submitted. Because when I had a discussion with the Auditor General in the province, he gave me a snapshot of exactly what the status quo of the province is. In fact, I've got the report here with me.
All right. Maybe let's do this. You had a meeting last week. You have another one coming tomorrow. What commitment can you make to ensuring that this audit is finalized in KZN?
As I do with any audit, the commitment is there from the province of KZN. In terms of, I need to put all the items and the data together, and I will liaise very closely with the Auditor General. We need to find out exactly that there's, in the actual report, when I analyze the report, there's twofold. One is contracts above 100,000, and then there's contracts below 100,000. The Auditor General wanted comments on contracts below 100,000. I need to get a status from the accounting officers with regard to that, how far they've gone with that.
How long should that take us? Because in January they said they needed 6 months, now the 7th month of the year, and there'll be no response.
Chair, in terms of the time and deadline, we with my discussions with the Auditor General, by the end of July, we would have finalized this audit.
Okay. End of July, pretty much you will have all the information. Right. Let me see. Let me surprise you, comrades. Let's move to the next focus. Yeah, just note the question. I also have about three questions that I also want to pose to National Treasurer on this very focus area that we're passing, but I'll come back to it with time. I just want us to move to the second focus here. Comrade Lee.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. Comrade Chair, I get a sense here from the DGs of provinces that they acknowledge that notwithstanding this report, the employees working for the state should have got the approval from from the accounting officers to perform remuneration outside work. I think there's no dispute about that. Secondly, the issue of non-disclosure is not being disputed here. Coming back to the report, Chair, this report is what? August 2008.
Oh, that's been
okay. But before this report, Chair, there has been a framework in place. There has been treasury regulations in place and all sorts of things. Therefore, people implicated in this report have done that outside the legal framework or the framework that existed before this report. Therefore, the HOD should have known that those people who did not receive approval or disclose have broken the law. Because a framework existed before this report was tabled. So the question from them is that they acknowledge that those people broke the law. Because now we are talking here about this, I can see this report, Chair, is saying may, you know. Accountant General indicated that companies should be requested to mention their shareholdings and so forth and so forth. That is where the gap is. But before this report, these people should have known that what they are doing is that outside the law. That is what I wanted to find out.
Yeah. Can you tie down your question into a single sentence? What do you want them to respond to specifically?
I'm saying, Chair, notwithstanding the issues that the DG spoke about, that there are still legal opinion outstanding, but the DG knew that people doing the job outside their employment by the state, they were doing wrong things. That's why before this report, some of them had to ask for the approval. Those who did not ask for the approval, they were breaking the law. That is the issue.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, as the Honourable Member has said, the framework is very clear. All public servants should be aware of the framework. There are minimum anti-corruption standards which have been set for each and every department, and each department should be able to comply with those. And those would include giving someone the responsibility of being an ethics officer who would have to communicate and raise awareness out of this. Perhaps if I can just emphasize, the legal framework is very clear. Directorships must be disclosed. The grey area is whether a directorship constitutes remunerative work, but they must be disclosed. Thank you.
I think if you look at the report on page 17, it says of the 30 employees who were directors or members of companies that did business with the department that they were employed, five were designated employees, which means by law they're supposed to declare. Of these five, one had not submitted a financial disclosure form. Three had not declared their interest. One incorrectly indicated that he had resigned from the CC. And the total amount involved here is 30 million rand. I think if people knew they were breaking the law, So which means you have the culture of impunity. The law is there, fine, but who cares about the law? And I think from where you are seated, the worry should be you have a civil service or you have some people within the civil service who have no consideration for the law. And I think that should be the point of worry. And from where was it? Having seen this report, what does it say to you? What does it say you need to do so that these kind of things do not happen? Because if it's going to be a case of people decide whether to comply or not comply, then we may as well not have the law. I think that is what it boils down to.
Chair, link up to that. Thanks for that. The specific question is what has been done. They are people implicated, indicated, they did not comply, they did not disclose, and 8 months down the line, the question what has been done? Here are the people who broke the law. What has been done? That is what we want to hear. That's why we have figures, we have names. Because we wanted to know what has been done to enforce the non-disclosure, the non-complaint. Because that is breaking the law. That is the issue here. Yes. The question.
I want to bring National Treasurer and because I understand that it's not you and National Treasurer who have broken the law necessarily. Well, I can't remember of my head a list that is here of all the people. I was surprised when Mpumalanga said they don't have the list. But we have the list, we can give you a copy of the people from Mpumalanga who are figured. But I want to check Special Treasurer. This thing, you have an oversight role, even I'll say oversight in court. And these things happen. Systems to monitor compliance are apparently not functioning properly. What happens?
Thank you, Chair. I was just doing a quick revision of Section 37 to Section 42 of the Public Finance Management Act. And specifically, the responsibility of putting a control system within a department lies with the accounting officer. We do provide support to the extent that departments require that type of support. Departments are supposed to have functioning internal control units which are accountable to an audit committee. So the responsibility does lie with the accounting officer. But if then, as you had indicated, what happens if there hadn't been compliance? But that is exactly why you have a report like this, because in the course of the audit and in reviewing compliance with the relevant legislation that governs the management of public finances, which is the PFMA, the Auditor General is supposed to also pick up this thing. But I think we must understand that an audit comes after the fact. There was one case in the Treasury. That case was not picked by the Auditor General. It was picked up through our own internal control mechanisms inside the Treasury. And like we say, you never know that controls are broken until something slips through. For as long as nothing slips through, you are under the impression that the controls are in place. And I think that the Auditor General can confirm that when they audit, one of the things that they do is to test whether they can rely with the internal control system that you have. Whether the internal control system that you are putting in place can be relied upon. And if they don't, then they end up doing a more substantive audit than they otherwise would. Lastly, to say that The Treasury regulations are also very clear in terms of declarations of any conflicts. As a matter of course, before a tender could be adjudicated, all the members of the adjudication committee are supposed to put declarations of interest on the table before they can even go ahead with the step.
But you see, the report says these things are not working. They are not there.
If they are not the chair, there is only one thing, is that the accounting officer of the relevant department needs to be pulled in. I can tell you what I do. If I pick up something like that, I will write a letter to the relevant accounting officer, if I have picked it up, and say that there is this thing happening. Sometimes it might does turn around that I am not there, and this ugly fellow sitting next to me would then write a letter in his authority as the accountant general and say that we have picked up the following, please remedy the situation. And I think that part of this process, Chair, is that in the case of the national department where those breaches have been there, the relevant accounting officers need to be called in and explain what it is that they are doing.
All right. Yes, Professor.
Yes, thanks, Chair. That is precisely the point. The point is here, the regulations or the framework here was not followed. So people implicated here have broken the law. That is the question, therefore, that what has been done to the very, because of this report is in there, people have, nothing has been done up until now. Therefore, I want to put it to the accounting officer present here that by not taking action, they themselves are breaking the law. Then, which suggests to me, then we must, as this committee, engage the relevant authorities, that those accounting officers themselves must be prosecuted.
Yeah, I think, Comrade Mill, one of the things that I thought we would talk to as a committee, but which the DG of National Treasury has spoken to, in our case, there are specific departments that are identified. And I think beyond this engagement, we may need to have those specific departments, SAPS, the Correctional Services, Agriculture, and the like. Then they should be able to account in terms of what they have done specific. I think our interest in interacting with the people who are here today, and I think the provinces will also have picked up that in terms of following up on the report, it looks like they need to say how do we get provinces to speed up in a way that suggests that it cannot be possible to break the law and then get away with it. But I was hoping, and I'm still hoping, that Public Service Commission and Administration as well as Treasury will be able to assist us, because they have oversight over how the public service operates in terms of their own observation of this report. What are the things that they think needs to be done to strengthen the system, and what interventions can they or have they made to ensure that these kind of contraventions are not just allowed to just go just like that, simply because they are committed, say, in agriculture. Well, you deal with agriculture. It is not our business. I think that is where I think it is located.
But, Chair, our, I hope I'm speaking on behalf of the other members. The frustration, Chair, arises from the fact that this report is 8 months old. What we hear here now is that despite that, systems as we speak are not in place. What then are we supposed to do? How? Because our EHA is to
engage with them that here are the gaps. What can be done? How can we assist? Because for us, we want this department to succeed. We are not policemen. We just want this state, this department to succeed. But here are the accounting officers, Chair, seated here that, yes, these gray areas have been identified 8 months down the line. But what we hear is that systems as we speak are not in place. What else are we supposed to do then?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to echo what Honorable Mbili has just said. To further than that, just to say to the Public Service Commission, hence the report has been here for the past 8 months. But when you check at page 36, in terms of the annexes, you check your Department of Health, Department of Education, two employees who are working for the department have been awarded an amount of more than 30 million. And these payments were made from 2004, 2006, and now it's 2009. And while we say that it's 8 month report, but the AG has been there, has been giving them the report since from then. And what is it? I just wanted to echo the sentiment that is sharing.
All right. Commissioner, can we come to that question at the end? And let me check what members in the other focus areas have to say. Because at the end of the day, yes, we need to say what then should happen. Not in terms of what the Public Service Commission should do in the Department of Agriculture, but to say what gaps in legislation and policies and regulations are exposed by this report, and what is it that needs to be done by these three departments, National Treasury, Public Service Commission, and Public Service and Administration.
Yes, Chair. If you look at page 32, right at the bottom, A follow-up review should be performed to determine the outcome of disciplinary action. Everybody agrees there should have been a disciplinary action here. If accounting officers receive this information but do not address problems, it will not improve the overall control measure. That is where we are. Nothing has been done. Accounting officers, Chair, if you can give me a chance. Accounting officers, they have not constituted any disciplinary action. That is when then I started this question. That if that is the case, because they are here, they are not telling us what has been done to correct, to put the remedial procedures in place in terms of disciplinary action. Nothing has been done. Therefore, we are sitting with the situation where these gaps, these shortcomings cannot be addressed because no actions have been taken, having received the report. That is where then I part with and say, what else then are we supposed to do? Because our sitting here, I thought, at least, was going to say, yes, you have done this, but can you do more? In a case where nothing has been done, you have an arrogant official here, so-called representative of Gauteng DG, outlined all the questions. Then we want her. We want her. Are you in a position to answer? Said yes. Confidently so. When we proceed, she doesn't do. This is the kind of the attitude we have from these people. And for how long are we going to repeat ourselves? We have other business to do. We are not here to play. They are arrogant and nothing. Something needs to be done. We cannot continue like this.
All right. Let me
Let me give Honorable Steele. And TSC, I'm just thinking whether it is possible to give us a sense as we continue. The report came out in August. Whether you have received any information from the department on disciplinary actions taken that might be ascribed to issues related to this report. It will be interesting to just to move on that particular line on whether this report has meant anything to affect the department. I think that will be a very important area. And I think with the problems, the key issue will be the report has been released a year ago. What has happened? Because the provinces know the people who are involved. I mean, we have the full list here from the AG. Province by province, the name, the ID numbers, the department they are working for, and the departments where they got the tender. So it should not be a challenge. If it is a challenge in Mpumalanga, we'll stop. Yes.
Provinces don't have that list. They can confirm.
All right. Okay. No, it's fine. I was saying we have the list. So we should be able to make it available. And I... Yes, ma'am.
Chair, a couple of things. The one, I just checked with the provincial DG. This report from the Auditor General is dated August 2008. But I only received it last month. So it's not like we've been sitting with it over a long period of time. That's the first issue. The second one is the one to confirm that we don't have the list as the chair says that he has. And the other point that I'd like to raise is the chair of Public Service Commission has also outlined the responsibilities of Directors General, which is different from the responsibilities of the National Director General. Because in terms of the Director General from provinces, they are accounting officers for the Office of the Premier. We do not account for the department. We have an overall coordinating role, but we are not.
I think we're looking at it in that context of the overall coordinating role and responsibility. I think that point has been made, and that is why some of your colleagues have said once we receive the report, this is the action we have taken, which means they accept responsibility to correct things. So people cannot be taking action when at the same time they're not responsible. But I don't want us to go that route. I want to give Honorable Steele to...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before I look, in fact, at the section that I've got from the report, could I just ask through you to the fellow members of my committee, while we have the provincial DGs here, is anybody dealing with the section on page 7, 1.7.3? Is anybody on this committee prepared to question or to follow up on
which one?
Page 7, 1.7.3.
Page 7?
Yeah.
I think let's deal with that last.
Can I deal with that last?
It's more of a...
It's a general finding.
Yeah.
But I think it's critical that we deal with this section because it relates to the provincial department, and this is our opportunity while all of the DGs are here.
No.
If I could just leave that section parked for the moment and come back to it.
Sure.
Thank you, Chair. If I could go then to the section that I'm looking at on pages 20 and 21, which deals with the declaration of interest in standard bidding documentation. We have a number of findings presented on page 20, which I'll come back to in a moment. But then on page 21, we have the recommendations of the Auditor General, which relate specifically to problems relating to the SBD4 ST12 form. The AG is recommending that the declaration should in fact revert to what was on the ST12, and also that the declarations of interest by employees and their spouses should be made compulsory. Those are the recommendations of the AG. Following that are, in fact, the responses from the Accountant General. I'm delighted to see that the Accountant General is here today, because from what I understand from his recommendations, he, in fact, wants to go further than what the AG has said. So, first of all, I would just like a comment between the AG and the Accountant General. Is the Accountant General, in fact, proposing to go beyond the AG in terms of his proposals to make them, if you like, even tighter than the AG is recommending? And I would like his comment on the substance of his response in particular.
I think, Chair, a short answer. Our view is that, the view in my office and my view is that this is a matter that is that lends itself easily to abuse in these processes, and we certainly believe that a tighter control is warranted.
Could I follow up then? Specifically, please, the Accountant General, could you comment on your response 7.3.4a, that you want to include related parties, which include close family members, and how that would be dealt with? Furthermore, on number B, how you would deal with the matter of shareholders and not just with directors. And then number C, how you would include transactions going back 12 months of the previous financial year. So those three issues, which are in the Accountant General's comments, the inclusion of related parties and close family members, the issue of shareholding, and the issue of the previous 12 months.
I'm not sure of the confusion in this one. I think what we're saying is that these forms should reflect that information, because we believe that information is likely to influence the person making these decisions in the process. So I'm not sure what...
Okay, I understand that that's the recommendation. Can I now have the comment from the other affected parties here, particularly the Public Service Commission and the Department of Public Service, as to how this would in fact be implemented?
Yes, can we have a comment on that?
Yes, Chair. I think overall the Public Service Commission definitely supports the main thrust of where the Accountant General is going with tightening these aspects. But particularly around the issue of spouses, we feel it should be broadened even further to include partners that cohabit in a common law arrangement. So it shouldn't just be spouses, but it should actually be broader than just spouses in relation to that.
We have, Chair, recommended in the past to cabinet, particularly for DGs at national level and senior managers at national level, that spouses, we should begin with spouses, and they got lost in the crevices. But we would go along with the suggestions of the Accountant General, and then work out ways in which, in our refinement of the instrument that we work with, we accommodate that if it was translated into a prescriptive.
Chair. Yeah, then let's get the response that I'll come to you.
I'm covered, Chair, first of all.
Pardon?
I mean, I'm in agreement with what everything is. I'll just be repeating myself.
Okay, all right, okay.
I thought Chair did my slot. But before I go on, I just want to check something. This explanation you just got it now, does it suggest that before, because this is recommended here, it's part of the recommendations and something is being done about it, does that suggest that before this report, it was okay? I'm coming back to the regulations now I talked to about. It was okay before this report that an accounting officer or a procurement manager, a person who is advocating on a tender, to award the tender to his or her spouse. Was it then okay? Does that suggest that? Yes or no?
What was never okay that if you were the decision maker, you could not part, form part of a decision that would influence or favor your spouse or your relative or your close friend. That was never the intention or the spirit of the law, even before these recommendations. I think the question asked is, but has this been happening? And I think what we've seen is that this has been happening, despite that.
So suggesting that the appreciation, there's no dispute that where this thing occurred, people who did it actually broke the law.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to refer members to Treasury Regulation number 16A 8.3, where it says a supply chain management official or other role player must recognize and disclose any conflict of interest that may arise. That is at A. And Regulation 16A 8.4 says, if a supply chain management official or other role player or any close family member, partner or associate of such official or other role player has any private or business interest in any contract to be awarded, that official or other role player must disclose that interest and withdraw from participating in any manner whatsoever in the process relating to that contract. The regulations are very clear.
Right.
The difficulty, DG, is that the onus is on the official in a context where the impulse is to seek to take advantage of situations. And I think this attempts to close things from the other end. Also bearing in mind that officials below senior managers are not required to declare at the top end. So who will know if they sit and adjudicate a tender and not say anything because they're not required in general to declare. But also there's a sense in which by being an official and letting it be known that you have an interest, that may have some kind of an impact on those adjudicating, even if you've left. The elements of insider trading that come into this conversely. So we really need to tighten really from all angles. I think what was lost in the amendment of the Public Service Bill was a clause that said to public officials in Section 30, their time at all times must be at the disposal of the state. That needed to have been accompanied by an ethical clause that closes the need to earn and enrich themselves over and above what they earn. But we take these things into account. We will continue discussions in the National Anti-Corruption Forum to see how we develop an even tighter framework within a context where the impulse is to enrich, where the mode of service delivery uniquely for South Africa, this is what complicates the matter. Departments don't deliver services. They procure services to deliver services. There is a very major difference between South Africa and many developing countries and developed countries where officials deliver services.
Okay. Accountant General, you want to add?
Yes. While I note the Commissioner's point, I think it's true, the official must declare. But once that is known, the accounting officer has a responsibility. And the responsibility is in Section 38, Subsection 1, paragraph H, subparagraph 1 of the PFMA, where it says the accounting officer must take effective and appropriate disciplinary steps against an official in the service of the department, trading entity, or coincidental institution who contravenes or fails to comply with the provision of this Act. And the Treasury Regulation is an extension of the PFMA. So I want oversight scope to understand that while the responsibility is that of the official to declare, but once this fact is known, there is a responsibility on the accounting officer that certain corrective steps must be taken. I know the PFMA says disciplinary action. I think corrective steps is the correct, and in which case, in fact, a disciplinary action may be appropriate under the circumstances.
All right.
Honourable Steele.
Thank you, Chair. I still have a couple of questions from the section, if you don't mind. Still on page 21, section D, the consideration to integrate the PSC and Cipro, which is discussed at the bottom of the page. I'd like to know how far that investigation has got and whether, for example, it has considered other databases such as that of SARS. Could we have a report on that particular proposal there? And then finally, Chair, if I could go back to page 20 to 7.3.2 and number B, where a tender is mentioned which has a value of 30 million rand. Now, in all of my research on this report, this is, I think, the single largest account of an individual and a tender where there is a problem in terms of this investigation. I know it concerns the Department of Education, but is anybody here in a position to comment on that single 30 million tender that had all kinds of problems with regard to employer-related companies?
On this, on recommendation D, that is already happening, Honourable Member. We mentioned in the beginning that we have followed up on the report that the Auditor General has published with another report, which will be brought back to Parliament indicating what has happened. So we have a working relationship where we counter-check at a global level for designated employees what the status quo is. But this still leaves out non-designated officials and doesn't touch on the tender-to-tender kind of thing in the internal workings of departments. For the global level, the broader level, we're also at the Public Service Commission. We've moved from the manual to the electronic system.
Okay. All right. What was the second part of the question about the tender in the Department of Education? Is there any information that you have?
The DG of Education must answer this one. I think what is interesting about the finding is the fact that it says that neither did the company declare the fact that the employee was, but we do not have that information. Maybe the Auditor General, because they had access to the working papers, they would have that report.
Well, I think on our route, what is coming out strongly here is that the departments that are mentioned here, national departments, we definitely may need to have an engagement with them so that they can talk to the individual in specific cases that relate to their specific department. I think that might be the route for us to take beyond this hearing. Yeah.
So to this one, Chair. By checking Treasurer as a custodian of our money. Now, the report has been out. Again, people have broken the law. To what extent do you then engage with the law enforcement agency to see to it that the recommendations for people who break the law are carried out? Because if that, then there is a gap, maybe you clarify me if there is that working relationship, because if we don't have that, you have recommendations here that the people who broke the law must be dealt with, they are not dealt with, we need to check it up, actually. We need to take it up. That is what I want to check specifically here, because these are the repository of our hard-earned resources. Here is the recommendation. To what extent then, the treasurer, do engage at that level to see to it that this has been followed up, that action has been taken?
Thanks, Chair. I think the DG indicated earlier on that not just specifically with this report, any matter of non-compliance that gets picked up, either during the regulatory audit of the Auditor General or through other means, Our follow-up process is with an engagement with the department's concerned, bringing to the attention of the department their responsibilities in terms of legislation, in terms of what they need to do. In as far as a particular action requires an administrative action, it would be difficult for the Treasury to carry that out because an administrative action has to be carried out by the department concerned, flowing from the contractor's employment. So that issue we expect the department to deal with. But we engage with the departments on those issues. The part that relates to the law enforcement is the part that as well, in as far as the initiating of that, the department should initiate those processes. Some of those, when they are already in motion and they are being dealt with, there's information required to the extent that we can provide that information and we have that information, we do. There are cases where, for instance, when the enforcement arms of government are wanting a clarification on how the legislation should be interpreted on a particular matter so that you make sure the prosecution is successful, we provide that interpretation. So that cooperation is there, but that cooperation is on demand. In other words, when the law enforcement agencies raise the matter. But in as far as initiating these actions, we encourage departments to initiate that because that's the area where it has to take place. The part that leads to enforcement of the legislation that we do, that's how we carry it out.
Okay.
On any of the matters.
All right. Well, if they don't? Yeah, no, I think what they say is that the Treasury cannot go to the police and report a case. It is the relevant department that should take the action. So, National Treasury does not operate like a super.
I don't agree with that, sir. Can you please hear my point? I am saying here, Treasury is responsible to make sure that our funds are being looked after according to the law and regulations. You have a Department A is not complying. You have this report, then you do the spade work, the enforcement agencies are there to assist. Then you have the report to the department, an A department. The A department does not want to take action. Then I am saying, I want to put you that I cannot accept a situation that if Department A is not acting on a report, then the Treasury will fold up its arms. Because my submission is Treasury is responsible to see to it our funds are being utilized effectively and within the law. That is my point. You are saying, Chair, to me, you are saying, unfortunately, they are not saying that. You are protecting them and saying they can do their job and recommend. And then if the particular A department is not doing anything about it, they get away with it. A Treasury cannot do stuff. So I'm thinking, am I hearing you saying that?
Let them respond.
Yes, sir.
Maybe I should respond first so that the DG can add something. Part of our role is that of enabling oversight to carry out its function. And I think what you are talking about now is to what extent is the Treasury carrying out that role? We prescribe that all the accounting officers have to present to yourselves, various committees and SCOPA, information, pertinent information relating to the activities that take place in the department. And all of these matters that go on in this manner are required to be reported upon. And if they're not reported upon and they're picked up by the Auditor General, the departments are then qualified appropriately. So we've made all of those prescriptions, and the idea to make those prescriptions is to recognize the fact that the Constitution requires that Parliament, through its committees, create the mechanism to hold executive to account to itself. And while we do the other actions that I've said, one of the things that we do that is our responsibility is to make sure that information is put at the disposal of oversight so that oversight can carry out its duties appropriately. And to the extent that those kind of prescriptions are not adequate, we can engage and make sure that we improve on that. I do not think that it is envisaged in the Constitution that one executive authority would be exercising that nature of oversight of another one. But that is the role that Parliament ought to exercise to other executive authorities.
Let us conclude the question. I understand the Honorable Billy's frustration here, because it's looking for somebody to go and do something about it. The underlying philosophy of this book, some people call it the dreaded Green Mamba. The underlying philosophy of this is that allow managers to manage and hold them accountable for their actions. And that is what is supposed to be happening. As the Treasury, we can point out these things. We provide the service to SCOPA. So if something like that has not happened, as I have said earlier, I could write a letter to that accounting office and say, we have not done anything about it. That fail, my minister might write to the executive authority of the relevant department and say that nothing has happened about it. Some of the departments will then turn around and say that I think my department is dysfunctional with respect to this area. Can the Treasury come and assist? But until that happens, where a department says that, no, we think that we now need help, we cannot do that. It's not like we are folding our hands, Honorable Member. Maybe we throw them up in the air as well in frustration that nothing is being done. But folding them, no, we are definitely not folding them. Does not make us the nice guys in government, but we point out this thing.
All right. Honorable Steele, I would like still to finish so that we can take
Thank
the remaining two.
Can I now go to the issues that I raised from page 7, please? Or do you still want to park those? We're running out of time, though. That's worrying.
Well, we have two members that have not asked questions.
Okay. In that case, can I let them have a go and come back to this?
Yeah, sure.
And just that I'm worried that we're going to miss out on the opportunity while the DGs are here.
Yeah, no, we won't. Honorable Detroit, can you please allow me to give Honorable Singh an opportunity? If we have time, I'll come back to you.
Chairperson, do I move on to conflicts of interest? Yeah, thank you very much. Chairperson and friends, colleagues, I think the common thread that flows through the findings of the Auditor General in this report here is a whole question of conflicts of interest in whatever form, whether your spouse did business, whether you did remunerative work, etc., etc. Now, I was looking, Chairperson, at a report on the management of conflicts of interest through financial disclosures put out by the PSC. And over here, you spoke about the Act. There was a framework, financial disclosure, SMS, senior management and upwards is supposed to disclose. And what I find disconcerting, though, is that although there may be gray areas with regard to the definition of conflicts of interest, but there's an administrative requirement in terms of the Act that senior managers and those above must declare, must disclose on forms that are prescribed, and the PSC would then assess those forms. But in this report, and the pointed question to the PSC is, have things changed since what you have written here? Because you are saying in this report here that although the submission of forms by national departments has reached on some occasions an average of 80%, or more, the submission of forms by provincial departments leave a lot to be desired, with provinces only recording 17% and 26% in certain financial years. Now, this tells me they are not even complying with the Act and they are not disclosing. Now, I want to know if that position has changed since then. Then, Chairperson, in the same report, which makes interesting reading, and thank you to our researchers, there are certain proposals that you make. I don't want to go through the proposals, but one of them is very interesting. Penalties and fines be imposed for non-compliance with the framework. Heads of departments play a more active role. Electronic financial disclosure framework be introduced. Ethics officers be appointed in all national and provincial departments. And that compliance with financial disclosure framework is linked to the performance agreement of SMS members. What have you done about these proposals? Where are they? It was made 2 years ago. What discussions have taken place? I'll come back with specific questions related to the report, Chairperson, after we get these answers.
Honourable Member, those are recommendations that we've made to the executive repeatedly on the improvement of the system. And we conduit those through the DPMSA and await to have an amendment in the prescript. And in terms of the trends, there's been an improvement at provincial level overall and a regression, I think, at national level that needs to be taken care of. Again, as I said, we have the latest report that builds on this report, which we're happy to come and present to you on actual and potential conflict of interest that goes into all of these areas. So those are the recommendations that we've made to the executive. The question that keeps coming up is a sense of frustration I pick up from all of you as if you're impotent as the legislature, and you're not, as the accountant general was saying. I think what it means for you now is, after we've had this discussion, to pick up areas that can be turned into recommendations for discussion by Parliament to end up in resolutions that the Speaker conveys to the executive, such as, for example, next year when you present your budget.
No, that's fine. Let's leave it at that. I think the major point is for us to be able to say what points can we pick up and run with to be able to close up the gap.
Chair, the reality is until we get a compliance rate of 100%, the situation will still not be acceptable, because it's a regulatory requirement for senior managers, and since 2001, we have not reached 100%. Last year, we were reaching 85%, but that still says that there's 15% of senior managers that fail or refuse to disclose their financial disclosures. And I think that is a serious issue. And the extent to which that has been dealt with must be asked, where is the political will and where is the managerial will to ensure that these repeat offenders actually ensure that they comply. The PSC doesn't only have the names of the department, but the names of the individuals of these repeated offenders that year on fail to submit their form. And you've got to ask yourself, why are they failing to do this? Are they not wanting to disclose something or reveal something? I think the situation gets even worse, because the AG's report is talking about 2005-2006. The PSC has a latest report, which we hope to present to this committee, of the year 2007-2008. We took a sample of 30% of SMS members. Of that 30% sample, 21% of those members have got potential conflicts of interest. And of that 21% sample, 10% are repeated offenders that refuse to disclose their financial disclosure form. When sending letters to the executive authorities and the ministers asking that they actually get these disclosure forms, or that they actually act on these SMS members by disciplinary action, to date, not one single SMS member has been disciplined for not complying with the regulations. And that's the reality. But having said that, Chair, I must also submit that in 2007-2008, provinces such as Northern Cape, Northwest, they have 100% compliance rate. And I think we must commend provinces that have achieved 100%.
National still has not done it, and most other provinces have still not achieved the 100% compliance rate. So I would want to submit that the situation stemming from the AG's report is actually worsening. And until something drastic takes place, you are actually going to get reports with even bigger figures than what the AG has demonstrated today.
Can we request that the list of those serial offenders be submitted to us in 2 weeks' time, the full list, and the years of non-compliance?
We are happy to do
that. And of course, once your report has come to Parliament, I think we should be able to have time to interact with it like we've done with other reports. Can I please allow Honourable Singh to round off?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, if there's anything that the Directors General of Provinces go back with from this meeting today, it is the response that we've got from the Director General in the Public Service Commission, that you are not, or people, senior managers in your provinces are not complying with a regulatory prescript. But it is a pity, Chairperson, and maybe it's an oversight on our part, that Directors General of National Departments are not here. Because there's nobody, we've got the DGs of provinces who are trying to answer for the heads of departments who have specific accounting responsibilities, and they just have to collate information, and we're putting them under pressure. But DGs who've been mentioned here, and I think you mentioned some of those departments, specifically on conflicts of interest, trade and industry, education, water affairs, correctional services, labor, arts and culture, agriculture, communication, where there are specific findings by the Auditor General. Here, they are not here. And I think we need to invite them here to respond to this script, particularly, Chairperson, whether or not they've investigated, whether they found that, well, you know, doing business with government or government department is one thing, but doing it fraudulently is something else. And whether they found whether any of these transactions have been fraudulent by these officials themselves. And then I'd like to know from the Accountant General, through you, Chairperson, his response to the conflicts of interest is, the responses received from the departments in this regard were insufficient. Can you tell us why they were insufficient? What would you expect a correct and fuller response to be? And, Chairperson, disciplinary action should be taken, so says the Auditor General. Was disciplinary action taken against anybody who has been identified as being a conflict of interest and whose name was given to you by the Office of the Auditor General at a provincial level? At a national level, unfortunately, we don't have anybody here to answer those questions. Thank you.
Chair, I am sure that the last question, the last part of the question is not expected of me to respond to. But the first part of the question is that, one, there seems to be responses that suggest that people don't know the regulations, and the regulations are clear, and there is specific action, remedial action suggested in the regulations, and the responses were not addressing those remedial actions. We would have expected that those remedial actions would have been specifically mentioned in the responses from the various departments, and that wasn't the case all the time.
Chairperson, in concluding questions on this section, I want to submit to us as a committee that we invite these heads of departments who have been mentioned here in the report to come and give us specific responses to the findings of the Auditor General at the next hearing.
Right. I think that should be more or less it. I think this has been mentioned once or twice before, that the departments that you have mentioned, the DG of Public Service Administration cannot answer for them. They must come and answer in terms of specific tenders and deviations that have been identified. I
want to link to it, please. That's one. I just wanted to check from the findings of the AG. Did you have any letter of approval with regard to
senior manager approval to do work. Do you have that? Because I just wanted to find out and check out in what under what circumstances was that letter of approval was made and who made it. Because I think it would be very useful to interrogate that if you do have letters of approval from the appropriate DGs for people, senior managers in particular, to do work outside of their employment. Talk to the conflict of interest. That's why I said it is linked to what Comrade Singers asked.
Chair, if I can just quickly refer to page 38 of our report, page 38, annex C of our report. You will note in that particular table, we have a column or a segment that deals with employees doing business with other national departments with approval. Now, for those instances, we would have records of the approval. I'm not sure if the Honourable Member wants the specific instances right now, but we would have... The working papers would have those approvals there.
For senior manager, maybe you can interrogate it at some point, not now, but you have for senior manager. Because the my point here is that we need to interrogate on what basis were those approvals issued in the first place. And then the people who issued those approvals, because I think here members, we are just crashing the surface. Here we are dealing with serious stuff. I'm crediting you that they will meet the seriousness from our part to take it head on, because from where I stand, no.
Okay.
Thank you,
yes, Chair, I'll just add, and then George will probably add on to what I'm going to say now, but we have not, as the Asian Children's Exercise, question the approvals. We've checked whether there was approvals or not. We've not evaluated the basis on which those approvals were given. But we would have the support.
Yeah, no, I think the question is, do you have such approval? We will do the evaluation ourselves. We wanted to check whether we have them or not.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we do have approvals, and I've got two in front of me. That is where we consider the officials to do excessive business with government departments. But the problem with the approval is it only indicates that approval is given, and the basis is not always reflected. So even if we provide the members with the approval, they won't be in a position to assess the basis on which that approval was given.
Even when approvals are given, there is no basis given why the approval has been granted. It only says approval given.
In many cases, yes.
All right. Honorable Detroit, I must give Honorable Comrade Mtandi to speak. And once he has asked the questions, then everybody and anybody can then ask anything from the report. Otherwise, she would have prepared and not had the opportunity to ask a question.
Thank you, Chair. National Treasurer, reference to the Green Mamba. I believe this is an effective tool, and thanks for that. Likely enough, you are not implicated in one of those reports. That means you are compliant. I would like to refer members to Section 38 of the PFMA, in particular, Clause 1, Subsection A, Roman Figure Number 3. Which is the accounting officer for a department must ensure that the department has and maintains an appropriate procurement and provisioning system which is fair, equitable, transparent, competitive, and cost-effective. It further said that in B that the accounting officer is responsible for the effective, efficient, economical, and transparent use of resources. And it further goes on paragraph 8, it says that the accounting officer must ensure and maintain that he must take effective and appropriate disciplinary steps against any official in the service of the department who contravenes or fails to comply with the provision of this act, who commits an act which undermines the financial management and internal control systems of the department, and who makes or permits an irregular expenditure. I'm saying this based on that to say this is an important tool. And then the AG has submitted this report and it's very clear what was supposed to be done. But it becomes a worrying factor when you find that there's not been any compliance. I'm saying in that because the Treasury regulations are also very clear. If you read 16A9, it says the accounting officer has got a duty to avoid abuse of the supply chain management system. So it empowers the accounting officer to take all reasonable steps to prevent abuse of the supply chain management process. It also empowers the accounting officers to investigate any allegations against an official or other role player of corruption, improper conduct, or failure to comply with the supply chain management system. And it further empowers the accounting officers to take steps against such officials or other role player and inform the relevant treasury of such steps. So I'm raising all this because you can see there's completely non-compliance with the MFMA, with the PFMA and the treasury regulations. To say this is a call to all the accounting officers who are here, and maybe DG should also take it further to all the accounting officers in the relevant provincial departments to say this parliament wants members to comply. I will also refer to the public service regulations. They are very clear. They impose duties on the conduct of officials. Like, there's a code of conduct in particular on the public service regulations which says that each and every employee, irrespective of him or her being a senior manager, because the public service regulation, it applies across the board. We are hearing about this thing to say the Disclosure Act only covers the senior management. But it's clear that the public regulations, they are very clear to say that all employees of government, they should be faithful to the Republic. That is the starting point. It further says that they must put public interest, because what we are talking about is an issue of public interest. You cannot be getting remunerated by you being a bitch of an employee as convincing as to say, this person is earning remuneration. Further on, this person again goes and benefits. What about our BEE policy, eradication of poverty? Because there are people who are supposed to be benefiting from government procurement, but you find that the same public service officials who are getting paid by government are again benefiting. And it's evident that there is also collusion, if you read page 29, to say there is a clear evidence of collusion. In theory, the regulations are very clear on procurement, how should it be done, and then accounting officers are also expected to be also training their procurement officials. What worries me also is the fact that the same accounting officers are the same persons who are said to have approved the remunerative work outside in government. So I think that should also work as a tool to say, when this person has been approved, how come did this person again comes and do business? Because once this person has been approved to do remunerative sector, that should also be used as a measure, barometer to say, by the way, you have said you have got other business interest now. Why are you doing business with government?
Okay.
So basically, that is to say, there's been non-compliance. The MFA may also further indicate that the issue of VAT, the accounting officer must make sure that all companies that are doing business with government are paying for VAT, any value above 300,000. But the report is indicating that more than 3 million has been paid where people were not yet registered with VAT. So that's another treasure page. It's a question here, compliance, to say, accounting officer, can we do what the green member is saying us to do? Basically, that's what I can say.
Thank you very much. I allow you to continue to demonstrate that we are not ignorant of the content of legislation. When we ask questions, we are not doing so out of ignorance. We are very clear about what you are supposed to be doing, which you are not doing as effectively and as efficiently as you should.
Thank you very much, Comrade. Because, you see, throughout, you are dealing with issues of non-compliance. Whether you're talking bad or whether you're talking disclosure or whatever, it's lack of compliance. And that is what is recurring. Now, I want to allow Honorable to draw, but from there I want to give Honorable Steele, I have not forgotten about you, to go back to page 7 and see how we can then wrap up the discussion. Because I think by now the provinces are very clear about what the content of the report is and the implications that it has and our attitude from this side. And I think our comrades from the provinces which chair SCOPA have an idea of what to pursue beyond this meeting. Honorable Detroit?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think what the example I want to illustrate here now is actually connected to what everybody has said today here. And it's clear to us that a lot of people are not only doing their work, and the only thing we're going to stop this is to take it from the top down. Now, we've had very good responses from this side, from this side, from those people there, but from that side there, I've had one lady from the Northern Cape that was very honest. She said she's without any fancy footwork, she's admitting to the shortcomings. And then it's also the use of the word. It's very fashionable in South Africa. They call it a challenge, but I think it's also that we must start using the word shortcomings or failures. A challenge is something different. So now I want to illustrate something here, and I think that after this we could, next time we have the accounting officers here, they must be prepared properly to answer our questions, and they should, if they can't answer, they should actually maybe contemplating the resigning. This form that you've given out, by the Auditor General, I've made a couple of notes here. There's a lot of pages here with names on. It's about 90 names to a page. And I've counted them, and I've seen that the Eastern Cape has got 4.5 pages full. The Free State doing this is now all doing business with themselves and other departments. Free State doing business, 1.5 pages. Gauteng doing business, 1.5 pages. And then the one I want to illustrate is Limpopo doing business, 15 pages. Mpumalanga, 7.5. National doing business with itself is 1.5. Northern Cape, 1.5. Northwest, 3.5. 3.5, yeah. And Western Cape, 3/4 of a page. Come back to Limpopo doing business. I take here, this is an extra D. I see here, I've just taken out a couple of big ones here, and I'm just going to mention the enterprise. It's a very Tava Yahoo Hoodie business enterprise. That is 8 million. Then there's another one, Mpufu Malelu business enterprise, 10 million. Then there's Rambua Trading, that is 16 million, and there is E&K Stationery Suppliers.
Can you zone on the question?
I get to the point. 13 million, and there's another one, 9 million. Now, all I want to say, Mr. Chairman, is how can this go past accounting officers? How is it possible? And we've got these amounts, and we've got all these lists. I mean, we're talking about 10, how many pages they say? In Limpopo, there was 15 pages of 90 names or entities per page. How can this go past an accounting officer? It is impossible. But these amounts, the country cannot go on like this. We need answers, and the people must come, and they must be accountable. Thank you.
I hope Moreno will look straight, you are writing down. Now we number Mazin Masitabu Sri in the Skumaramin. Honorable Steele?
Thank you, Chair. If I could direct the attention of the P people here to page 7 of the AG's report and to section 1.7.3. Transversal findings concerning provincial department deviations from the supply chain management process. Now, there are 5 points listed here, Chair, A, B, C, D, and E. A, B, C, and D all point to various kinds of technical deviations and problems. I'm particularly concerned with paragraph E on that page, where we have provincial departments that awarded contracts to employee-related entities that had not scored the highest points. Does this sound like something we looked at yesterday during the evaluation process, without providing reasonable and justifiable grounds for doing so? I'd like to hear, please, Chair, from the DGs that are here, whether they are aware of this happening in their province and whether this is being investigated, whether there are any disciplinary findings, whether it's being reported to their provincial scopers. What is actually happening with regard to this finding from the AG? Per province, please.
I think you want to follow up on it. Yeah.
Chairperson, I don't remember who said that they are not responsible, HODs are not responsible for MECs, and no, DGs are not responsible for MECs. I do understand that. But DGs are responsible for HODs, who are to account to them, and they are to account to the premier. And I believe even an HOD comes to the DG to say, there is a problem in my department concerning the MEC. She or he will go to the Premier and say, Premier, since the MECs are under you, please call this MEC, we'll have to solve this problem. But as they are saying, it says that, it tells me that they are not responsible for those people. Who they are responsible for, I really don't understand.
Okay.
Somebody said that.
Let's do it this way, Honorable Steele. The responses we got at the beginning from the provinces clearly indicated that there has not been any movement in actioning this report. So if we go back, we're going to get explanations about intentions and whatever challenges that were in place. I think the importance of what you have quoted should assist our provincial counterparts, because that whole section deals with provincial deviations. Page 7, 1.7.3. So it is an area that they may need to take a close look at.
Sure, that's precisely what I'm urging should happen. Thank you.
Okay. No, that's fine. Let me check my chairperson from the Free State.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is basically comments, but I think I'm going to make my comments now. Chairperson, you know, listening to what is happening here this morning, to me it's scary what's happening here, to say the least. Because it looks to me that there's a total lack of understanding by the DGs, HODs, and senior management of the seriousness of what is presented to us in this report. It is very serious. And I say it on the basis, if you look at some of the responses, especially I refer to the Free State one, where some of the HODs never even bothered to reply to the HOD or respond to the queries from the HOD's management letters. That, to me, is very scary. The second thing is that this boils to disrespect for the, not for Parliament itself, but also for the structures that have been set there, the institutions like the Auditor General. And the third thing that I picked up, there's a total disregard by employees on the laws, the rules, and the regulations on this thing. And that is what's making this so scary. Because what even makes it worse that we're only talking about senior management upwards. Now, what is happening downwards? I think it's very scary.
Okay.
But a point that we also miss here, Chairperson, this morning, that the Auditor General's report was published in August 2008. But this process started long before that. Letters, management letters were sent to the department to respond to certain issues. So it is not that if this report, nobody knew about it, these issues. These issues were known to the heads of the departments, the DGs, on provincial and national level, long before that. So I just want to make that point clear. And lastly, Chairperson, on a lighter note, I saw such a lot of good fancy footwork this morning. I think Bafana and Santana would be proud to have this lot in their team. Might win the World Cup with this fancy footwork here. Thank you.
Well, if the World Cup was a debating contest, maybe. I want us to wrap up, and I'm recognizing Oleni, I'm recognizing Mashiani. Things, did I have your hand up?
Yeah, Chairperson, just to confirm.
No, I'm checking.
Oh, okay.
Did you have your hand up? All right, but let me start with Ngoveni and go to Mashiani and then I'll come to you. Let me check if there's anybody else. Then I want them to wrap it up, okay, and then come with me. Yes, Ngoveni?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I think my observation has revealed that since this morning we've been asking very critical questions which are even relevant, but addressing them to wrong people. And I think this is something that we need, as you said, to correct as a matter of agency. I would imagine that at this level you should have invited, as you said, national departments which are implicated in this report to come and account, accounting officer studies. So that when we say the Department of Correctional Services, you are supposed to do this, you have not done that, people have not complied, the accounting officer must answer to score by an action must be taken. I get a sense that people are even talking about legal opinion. I don't know what it's all about, because the regulations, the PFMA, the laws that govern financial management are very clear. Very, very clear in terms of disclosure of information. What needs to happen is that people must come and answer at this level in terms of the national department. And even directors general, my sense will be that if I'm a director general of a province, at least I will have an idea. And because I'm coordinating all the departments in the province, have an idea of what is happening in which department and so on. But my advice, Chair, in future, if you are going to consider it positively, is that questions should actually be raised formally and officially in writing beforehand, so that when a director general appears here, the questions have already been raised and the auditor general is supposed to answer. And lastly, in terms of what is in the report, in terms of provincial departments, accounting officers are going to answer to the various standing committee on public accounts in the various provinces. That you can be assured of. And in that regard, you will see heads literally rolling. Or those of us who occupy these positions are going to be fired. One of the two is going to happen. It's either heads will roll or will be fired. Even the director general, by the way, they also run departments and which are also implicated in these reports. So if they are found wanting in terms of managing this process, we will demand, rightly so, that heads must roll. Because the accounting officer should actually explain very clearly what is that has actually been done. So I'm saying, Chair, finally, that you see, it can't be a debate that happens for the sake of it.
what I thought Treasury, Public Service Commissioner and the AG will assist us in coming up with strategies that would actually make sure that we arrest this problem going forward. That is not forthcoming to me. But in the meantime, heads will be rolling as they and when they come with the action that should actually address this problem.
But you can see him still a good town from Kuku and Alupopo. All right. Commit Mashia.
I seriously restrained myself today in terms of what was actually happening. And to me, there's a serious dereliction of duty somewhere. I don't know where. But I feel that we must sit down with the Accountant General and the Treasury and the AG's office to look at this issue very deeply and try to assist the Public Service Commission and the department in terms of dealing with these things. You know, maybe it's because officials don't go and interact with communities down there. Maybe that is why we have this serious problem in South Africa. You know, there are communities which sleep without eating. When we are busy enriching ourselves with money that is supposed to better their lives, and we come here, you know, and I want to believe that most of the warm bodies which are here slept in hotels, and that is government money used, came here, wasted 3 hours of our time because we did not get answers. And I'm seriously perplexed on the issue of DGs and how this thing is working in the premier's offices, and they don't have any say over anything. I think that must be really sad. That if it is like that, why do we actually need provinces? Let's stop that. Because they are not of an assistance to us. Actually, it is taking more of the resources which would be going to down to the poorest of the poor in South Africa. Now, I hope, Chairperson, that as we had agreed in the briefing session with the AG's office, that this is not the end of the story. We're going to dig deeper and deeper, and please alert DG, alert in your provinces. Everybody that is involved in this, and the HODs that we're coming for them. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Comrade Neil.
Thanks, Chair. Quickly, the perception, Chair, you know, as COFAM, our interest with regard to provinces is that provinces receive money through the division of revenue base. They don't have income. They don't have resources by their themselves. As national parliament here. That's why, Chair, I wanted to caution the arrogance. You know, it cannot be accepted. I'm a lead delegation of ANC in this committee. You know, this perception that we will, because we are governing, we will let people go away with murder. Let me warn you that it will come to an end. It cannot be that because they are provincial, you see, here I'm not underplaying the role that the provincial scope plays here. And we are not there. We are not competing. This is not a competency terrain. We are doing our job. We are saying, because of that revenue base, we are responsible to make sure that provinces are functioning properly through that bill. Hence our interest. So we are then saying, in future, to engage with this committee at this level, especially, you must respect. Because I'm not saying that. Now, all of you across it, you must
respected. But going forward, we need to make sure that the DG of public service, that we loosen up or we tighten up these groups, because we cannot have a work in progress of something for 6 days. And people, because these are educated people, they know the gaps. They are getting away with murder because they know these are learned people. And we cannot sit here trying to argue the legal framework or and so forth. We need to tighten things for all of you. Like I said before, our interest here, we wanted to see a prosperous state. We don't want a failing state here, because some people are just literally misappropriating or misusing funds. That's my point. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Very quickly, Chairperson, I have a little of a contrary, contrary view to my other two colleagues, a different view. I think this has been a very useful exercise. If nothing else, it has created a great awareness. It has also highlighted the seriousness with which not only this SCOPA, but the SCOPAs of the provinces are going to deal with this matter of conflict of interest, of corruption, of fraudulent activities. We may not have got all the answers that we needed from the Directors General, and I have empathy for them, because I do know that they are not directly responsible. Heads of departments in provinces are not directly responsible to account to them. However, they do have a transversal function. They do report to the premiers, and I'm sure that they are going to go back to the premiers, who will crack the whip. Although we would like to see heads roll, Chairperson, I don't think we have time to attend many memorial services of 7 or 8 hours. So let's hope no heads roll, but we get the work done and get everything in order so we don't come back here and discuss conflicts of interest, non-compliance. And also I concur with Comrade Mbili that DPSA, Public Service Commission, National Treasury need to come together to tighten up where we need to tighten up. So nobody tells us in this report or tells the Auditor General, we're not aware of certain prescripts, we're not aware of conflicts of interest, and so on and so forth. Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. Thank you, Comrade. And thanks to our colleagues from the provinces. I do hope you will find the exercise very useful in terms of sharpening the focus. We rely on you to take the process forward beyond this engagement. We also want to thank the provincial DGs for having made time to come here and to clearly have a sense of what the thinking is from our side. And also National Treasury for being here, the Public Service Commission, the Department of Public Service and Administration, as well as the Auditor General. And before I adjourn, let me check with the DG of National Treasury.
Just one last thing, Chair, to say that one question that was asked, what we were doing. As a Treasury, we decided to pay for this audit report. This report was paid directly from the Treasury vote, so we didn't leave it to the department to pay that.
Okay.
And then lastly, I mean, to thank you and conclude that I was obviously not disappointed in leaving the other committee and coming here. I told them that there is one committee in Parliament that instills the fear of God in public service. So,
okay.
Thank you, Chair. The Public Service Commission also would like to thank you for the opportunity, particularly also to in the presence of provincial chairs. We rarely get the opportunity in one fell swoop to convey a sense of what is happening in the provinces. It might be something that we want to explore also in future in 6 months' time to see what has happened from this discussion to come together, because although we have provinces, we are a unitary state. And the public service in particular is a single public service. It's not a fragmented. So we're really very grateful for that. We hope we'll schedule time to come and present the follow-up report to this that we were talking about. And then lastly, a question I would have to members of the honorable members, which ties up with what Honorable Mashiyane said, is that in a context where we have high levels of poverty and high levels of unemployment, and I consider being in the public service to be a privilege and an honor and not a right and something that I'm entitled to, should we not be staying where we are now? I have no business at all, together with my family, since I earn an income, engaging in any business at all. So that even the question of financial disclosures does not arise. Clearly, in the last 14 years, the mechanisms we've put in place have been problematic. So where we are, should we not just bar completely the engagement by public officials in private work? It would be extraordinary for Coca-Cola to have people working outside Coca-Cola when they're focused on profit. Google doesn't allow its employees to go and work elsewhere. Why are we even considering the possibility of that? Where unemployment is high, I could be easily unemployed. I am lucky to have a paycheck that I share with my family. But this is a future debate that Parliament should engage in.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honourable members, maybe if I could just conclude briefly by saying thank you for this opportunity. I think, as with the case of National Treasury, we administer national legislation across the public service, and compliance is a problem. It's certainly a problem. We welcome the AG's report because it demonstrates that clearly compliance is a challenge and it's a problem. So even if it might have been a bit uncomfortable for some of us, it does assist us in our work as well to know that Parliament is actively seeking ways of ensuring compliance. You had indicated earlier that you wanted to have a discussion around the areas exposed by the AG's report where the framework might be lacking, but I know there's no time for it, but perhaps we could submit something in writing to you if that would assist you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We want to thank you and once again the fact that the committee was clearly not happy with the level of compliance. As you can see, out of the 600 million, more than 500 million comes from the provinces. And I think that does emphasize the fact that the provincial scopers must indeed make very, very serious follow-ups. We will be awaiting to get the report from you about officials who are not complying, and I think we can then take it up as a committee. And I think we agreed that departments that I mentioned, like agriculture, agriculture, communications, correctional services, education, trade and industry, water affairs and forestry, as well as labor, we will call the accounting officers to come and account for specific cases that have been noted by the Auditor General. And we also hope, AG, that KwaZulu-Natal is going to fulfill its obligations as committed to publicly by Mr. Govender by the end of July. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.